For critical information ignored by the mainstream media, log on to davidicke.com/headlines now.
From Feature Story News in London, I'm Ollie Barrett. Rescuers continue attempts to reach survivors trapped in a school in Mexico City, which came down in an earthquake on Tuesday. At least 21 children died when the primary school collapsed. Over 230 people are known to have died nationwide in Mexico in the 7.1 magnitude quake. The whole of Puerto Rico has been left without power after Hurricane Maria. Flooding described as catastrophic has been reported in some parts of the US territory. A sixth person has been arrested in connection with the terror attack on a London tube train last week. A 17-year-old boy is the latest to be detained by police after he was arrested in South London. Our UK correspondent Natalie Powell reports.
All six people remain in custody. The 17-year-old boy is being detained by police after a raid in South London. Teams continue to search the property in the Thornton Heath area where the arrest was made. It comes after three men were arrested in Newport, South Wales earlier this week, and two men were detained on the weekend. A partially exploded improvised device injured 30 people after it was detonated on a busy tube carriage on Friday.
In Uganda, the military and police have surrounded the parliament building and major roads in Kampala have been blocked off ahead of the tabling of a bill to remove the presidential age limit. The bill, if passed, allows President Yoweri Museveni to stand again in 2021. Opposition politicians had planned to protest the bill in Parliament as it was tabled. Michael Baleke reports from Kampala.
Anti-riot police and tear gas tankers have blocked the Parliament building in Uganda's capital Kampala. Traffic on major roads leading to the city has been diverted. The police have also surrounded the homes of main opposition politicians and some have been arrested. The opposition politicians were to hold processions to Parliament to protest the age limit bill from being tabled. Currently thought to be 73, incumbent President Yoweri Museveni would be non-eligible to run in the 2021 election. He's been in power since 1986.
Spain's Prime Minister has gone on national television to call on the Catalan region not to hold its independence referendum slated for October the 1st. The government in Madrid and Spain's constitutional court say the vote will be illegal, but the separatist movement is pushing ahead. Jack Parrock reports.
Mariano Rajoy, the Spanish Prime Minister, used his TV broadcast to demand that the Catalan regional government end what he called its escalation of radicalism and disobedience. Police and security forces have been confiscating voting materials and campaign leaflets and posters all this week, which sparked a protest of over 40,000 people in the Catalan capital, Barcelona. The wealthy northern Spanish region has been pushing for independence from Spain for decades, and the separatist movement insists it will hold the referendum on October the 1st.
From bureaus worldwide, this is FSN.
Thank you very much, Ollie Barrett. Good evening. Welcome to the Richie Allen Show. It's Thursday, 21st of September, or September 21st. 2017. My name is Richie Allen. Hope you've had a good old day. Lovely evening here in Manchester. Got a good guest for you. And I've got a good first hour as well on the Richie Allen Show in association with davidicke.com. As always, you're welcome to it.
Broadcasting live from the great city of Manchester, England. This is the Richie Allen Show on davidicke.com. The Richie Allen Show, brought to you in association with davidicke.com. And now, live from Manchester, England, here is Richie Allen.
Lovely stuff. Lovely hurling, as we say, in the old country. David Shaler, formerly of MI5, joins the programme today. I've asked him on specifically to talk about why the UK tabloids have been full of stories this week about Planet X, Nibiru, and Christians, some Christians anyway, conservative Christians, saying that the recent horrible weather, catastrophic weather, and subterranean events in the Gulf of Mexico, Mexico, of course, the Caribbean, some conservative Christians believing that this is evidence of an unknown planet entering our solar system, but more besides. Some have even said the world will end on Saturday, and I'm not mocking anybody, I don't mock anybody, but people have been predicting the end of the world for many years based on various signs in the Bible and other religious texts. But it is interesting Now, David Shaler doesn't believe the world will end on Saturday, but he does believe, does David, that codes were hidden in the text of the Bible that do predict, or codes that did predict, do predict a huge change for humanity in this present time. We'll be discussing the hard evidence about that and more. It's a real area of interest for David Shaler, a real area of research for him. So we'll talk to David about that in the second hour. Maybe before the second hour, we'll start chatting with David. We'll see how it goes. As usual, the programme is live on davidicke.com. Do bookmark davidicke.com/headlines. And we're on Fab Radio 2 in Manchester and TuneIn Radio as well. There is a problem with the Richie Allen website. I'm on it. I'll be dealing with it. And I'll get that sorted as soon as I possibly can. A couple of things I want to mention before cracking on. The Live Leak show with my good buddy and agent or agent provocateur, Hayden Hewitt, the needler himself. Love Hayden. The last Live Leak show ever. Never say never. But the last Live Leak show for the time being broadcasts live tonight on liveleak.com at 10 p.m. UK time. And a new television show featuring Hayden called Trigger Warning will replace that. So the last Live Leak show ever, the zaniest, the most profane, and the most hilarious, and sometimes the most pithy commentary show, the Live Leak show, last one tonight. So to those who make that programme, have a blast tonight. They always do. Now, tomorrow, Friday, when you don't ordinarily get anything new from me, we work Sunday to Thursday, but Jamie Icke will be here for Jamie Icke's Friday Night tomorrow, live at 7 p.m. UK time. He's got a wonderful guest. Not going to spoil that by telling you who it is, but I know who he's got. He's got a marvellous guest joining him, and both Jamie and his guest will be taking calls from you on Skype and on the phone after that. So please listen to Jamie tomorrow night. I thought the first Jamie Icke Friday night was brilliant. It'll only get better as he gets into it. So Jamie will be with me. He'll be here in the studio. You won't be hearing from me at all. Jamie will be here and he'll be entertaining you, hopefully educating you tomorrow night. That's Friday. So please listen out for that. And please participate. You couldn't meet a more genial, a more down-to-earth bloke than Jamie Icke. He'll be happy to take your calls, as will his guest. All right. I'm looking forward to David Shaler. I love listening to David. I had a good chat with him today. He's an incredibly articulate man, very bright man, and talking about Planet X, talking about Nibiru, where all that came from, all that idea, and Bible codes. That's going to be interesting a bit later on. Before then, normally I'd give you the rundown now on what's been happening. Theresa May apparently is going to offer the European Union 20 billion euro and to request a 2-year transitional period. She's going to do that tomorrow in Florence. That is, I think it's unconstitutional. I think it's undemocratic. I think it's two fingers up to every man and woman who voted to leave the European Union. If you didn't hear David Vance on the programme last night, I suggest you listen back to that. If you want, it's on YouTube now. Go to youtube.com. Listen to David Vance. That's a terrible thing. And I'm not going to get into it now because I don't want to. Right? We might talk about this on Sunday View. A lot of people are in dire straits in Dominica as well. I mentioned the weather in the introduction. Weather events. David will talk about those. David Shaler. Apparently people are dead and missing on Dominica. They're really getting a battering in the Caribbean, aren't they, over the last few weeks. I'm sure David Shaler will have opinions and will have commentary on that. So we'll talk about that a bit later on. Right. So I want to talk to you about something. Now, don't groan. Don't roll your eyes up in your head. Bear with me for 3 minutes. I'm not going to repeat a lot of old ground. And you might think I'm going to, but I'm not. I want to talk about the culture of narcissism, which I have tried with a lot of very learned men and women, Gillan Atzmon, of course, Frank Ferrady, David Icke. We've tried to define identity politics on the show. And you're screaming now, yes, Richie, a lot. Do we have to listen to this again? You do. I have tried to define identity politics on the programme quite a bit over the last few months. And the reason for that is, I think it's vital, and I've been thinking a lot about this. It's kept me up nights. And that's the truth, by the way, it really has done. I think it's vital for us to understand the dangers of narcissism in light of attempting to understand what is really going on in the world. That sounds very arrogant. But to attempt to understand it, you have to talk about the culture of narcissism. To answer the question, why? Why are we all here? Again, the barrier to many even beginning to answer or even to begin to seek answers to those questions, the barrier for me is the culture, the all-pervasive culture of narcissism. And I want to talk about that just for a few minutes, if you don't mind. I think, and again, I've spent a lot of time this week thinking about it. A lot of time. And ironically, this is going to sound ironic, looking at my own personal experiences, you narcissistic bastard, Richie. No, but just my own personal observations. It's evident to me that narcissism is overwhelming society. And it's glaringly evident wherever you look. So whether it's school, work, TV, obviously Facebook, Twitter, it's everywhere. So what is narcissism? How would you begin to define it? Well, it obviously has a definition in the dictionary. It's basically obsession with oneself, obsession with yourself, obsession with who we are individually. And as was pointed out across several shows, it leads to a kind of a breakdown in our ability to relate to people or to relate to wider society. We don't understand people. We don't understand society or the world other than how we see ourselves in it. Okay, so outside of our exceptionalism, which is, you know, an aspect of this narcissism, this idea of our exceptionalism, our importance within the world, we don't relate to people or to society because of the narcissism and the culture of it. Where is it coming from? Well, far more researched and learned men and women like the aforementioned people have done a lot more work on this than anybody else. I don't do work on this sort of thing. I provide a platform. I don't want to get into all that again. But I have a brain. I do observe things and I read a lot. It has been engineered. There's no doubt in my mind that we've been engineered to become the way we are becoming and we are. There's no doubt in my mind. And I think it could be argued, this is a great academic thing. People used to say this, and it was a good thing. Sadly, people don't say it anymore. It could be argued. Everybody knows everything these days. Everybody will tell you that this is the way it is. End of. Except those who are really seeking truth and knowledge. And they will say, well, from what I've seen, it could be argued. Now, for me, it could be argued that this narcissism is most evident from a starting point of view, from the very beginning, it's most evident in people's inability to deal with criticism of their ideas. People's inability to, you could even say, to cope with someone telling them that they think they're wrong, right? Or that I don't think you're reasoning on this particular issue is sound. I think you've gotten that wrong. That's where, for me, it's most evident as a way to begin or even beginning to understand it. Now, it's not exclusively people not taking criticism. I'm not saying that. But it's a good start to understand narcissism in society. Now, some listeners will say, you might be saying it yourself. Come on, Richie. People going into meltdown because they've been challenged isn't a new thing. Do I hear somebody in my native Ireland saying, sure, hasn't that always been a negative human characteristic? You know, how we struggle with being contradicted, how we intensely dislike being told we are wrong, and we intensely dislike those who tell us they think we are wrong. Of course, it's always been there, no doubt about it. But try and scale it for a minute. I don't think, and again, they say you should never repeat yourself on radio. Well, then I'm finished. I repeat myself all the time. I've been thinking about it for a long time. I don't think we've ever seen anything like this. The levels of anger, vitriol is a good word, outrage expressed by people when they're challenged or when they hear or see something that doesn't correlate or even conform with their own worldview. And their worldview is based, as I said a minute ago, on how they see themselves in the world. Now this applies, and in the future I'm going to talk a lot about this in relation to the so-called alternative media. It really does, but I'm going to leave that more or less for a few minutes. So people's worldview based on how they see themselves in the world. We've never seen anything like the levels of anger, hatred, vitriol, spite expressed by people challenged. So this is a dangerous subjectivity. An incredibly dangerous subjectivity. Because people more and more and more exist inside of themselves. Right? And they exist in this narrow world they've created for themselves rather than exist in the real world. And I know you're shouting at the radio now, Richie, the real world is far different than the world outside your front door. I'm well aware of that. But whatever the real world is, people are not existing in it or trying to understand it. They are living within themselves. And here's a controversial statement. And there will be a lot of people listening to this program who will know a lot more about psychology, the science of understanding the mind, pathology, our feelings, than I do. But I don't believe we're very far now from sociopathy. And people will shout at the radio and say, that's ridiculous, Richie, because sociopaths can be violent. They can be murderous. They can be incredibly destructive. And now I'm not saying that all narcissists are sociopaths, of course. I'm not. But I don't believe that the engineering we're seeing of people and of people's state of mind, I don't believe it stops at narcissism. Do you understand what I'm trying to say there? I believe it rolls on. And it might be possible the narcissist evolves into sociopathy. Again, this has been going over and over and over in my mind for months. And I can't get my head around it. I've got ideas flying around my head about this subject. Now, I've read a lot in my life. I've produced radio programs for many, many, many years. And producers, God love them, are the real heroines, heroes, whatever you want to call them, behind the success of talk, television and radio programs. Because the producers are the poor divils, as we say in Ireland, that have got to read everything and synopsize it for their presenters. You've got to read an awful lot of stuff, a lot of garbage a lot of the time. And I've read a lot, and I really have, on many, many, many subjects. Doesn't mean anything, but I've come across a lot of opinions on subjects. And I would guess, again, you might be inclined to scream at me here, I would guess that increasing numbers of people, because of this culture of narcissism, and most of them probably wouldn't admit it now, and I'm talking adults here, I'm not talking about children, even though children are being targeted. Quite possibly, most caught up in the culture of narcissism might have quiet times where they contemplate the possibility that they are the only real person in the world and that everybody else is actually not real. You're talking some bollocks now, Alan. I'm not. Think about that. I read quite a bit about this before an interview my former presenter, Billy McCarthy, rest in peace, Billy did some years ago. I read about this. And it's been on my mind for quite a while. I was fascinated by it. And just in case you're wondering, dear listener, no, I haven't ever contemplated whether me, Richie Allen, I'm the only real person in the world and everybody else is a figment of my imagination or are not real. No, I've not had that. There might be serious pathology in terms of my own health and state of mind. I could admit to that. But no, I've never contemplated that. But I believe that this is a strong possibility. And if people start to think like that, if people begin to think like that, they are the only real person. Maybe, just maybe, for the narcissist, people might cease to be warm-blooded fellow travellers along the journey that you interact with, that you love and you touch and you be touched by and you share life experiences with. And instead, other people become a means of validation, right? The narcissist might use people to validate and to affirm. They have no use for anybody else. And I'm fascinated by it. I'm no psychologist. I'm no sociologist. As I said, feel free to shoot down these ideas. I won't go into meltdown. Right? I won't be triggered by you disagreeing with what I'm saying. But the obsession with the self and evaluating society and everything in it from the standpoint of how you see yourself in the world, and then if you factor in living online or on your phone or your tablet, it's not a joke, it's not funny, because hundreds of millions live like this. Most of their day spent on social media, less and less time spent sitting with people who actually interact with them, and importantly, who challenge them, challenge their ideas about themselves, challenge their ideas about the world or whatever. And if you subscribe to any of that, there is a possible outcome. It could be argued, he says again, that there's an inevitable outcome where people cease to see others as valid, as I said, valid, equal travellers, important, worthy of love, even worthy of life, right? And society, and this is where great men and women, and I'm looking forward to reading David's forthcoming book, rather than challenge this lunacy, and it is incredibly dangerous and a real barrier to understanding, society is actually enabling this. It's enabling it. We see it at universities and high schools all over the world. Rather than challenge this, I think, the most dangerous social change in human history, rather than challenge it, I can't believe I'm saying this, universities are tailoring the experience of academia, supposed to be, of course, a place for fearless learning, fearless, you know, free speech, challenging ideas, challenging yourself. Academia, or the experience of it, is being tailored specifically to suit these narcissists or identitarians, as I've called them on this program. So curriculums are being torn up, language is being changed, safe spaces are being created to allow the narcissist, which is a better way of describing them than an identitarian, to experience it on their own terms. Exclusively on your own terms, you get to experience university life, college life, whatever. It's crazy. It sounds crazy, but it's happening. And I've dug out a couple of clips for you, don't I always, of people I think you might be interested in hearing on this subject. Got in touch with an academic PhD called Joanne Williams today. Joanne came back to me very quickly. I think we might get her on the programme next week. But Joanne has been talking and writing a lot about this, and I want to hear you to hear some of what she has to say. This is Joanne Williams. Have a listen to this. You're with The Richie Allen Show in association with DavidIke.com for Thursday, 21st of September. Joanne Williams.
I'll just start by perhaps stating the obvious, but I think identity politics is everywhere nowadays. And we have seen it so much this weekend, where nearly everybody who speaks in any of the discussions feels the need to preface their remarks by saying, speaking as a woman, speaking as a mother, speaking as an academic. And it's these kind of biological, often biological, but not always kind of assumed cultural identities that have really come to define each other, we use them to define each other. I don't think identity politics is eating itself. I wish identity politics would eat itself. And I think that there are two key things that I'd really like to bring out today that I think are problematic with identity politics, the way it's being framed today. The first is just it's incredibly limiting. It's about defining ourselves based on the most biological, the most boring aspects of our identity and not being able to move beyond that. This is not transformational, this is limiting. Second thing is that often claims to identity are based on victim status, and we become involved in what's termed a kind of oppression sweepstakes, where to be able to maintain our identity, we have to outdo other groups based on who is the most victimized. And I think that's incredibly unhelpful.
We might have been separated at birth, Joanne Williams and I, because I've been mulling that over for a long time now. And it's really important, and I touched on it a lot lately with guests. David has done a lot on it too. His forthcoming book is going to be fascinating. I mentioned it a minute ago. Victimhood as a symptom of the identitarian narcissistic personality. She says to maintain our identity, we have to outdo other identity groups by way, how did she phrase it? Competing to show who is the most victimized. She's right. And how does it manifest that? Well, it manifests in everything, and it isn't an exaggeration to say everything becoming offensive. As an illustration, see the reaction of Natalie Rowe, the black former escort, on Twitter yesterday, and some of her followers, when I jokingly suggested the Gucci bag that she mentioned was probably a knockoff bought from the African boys on the Costa del Sol, which I know she's visited. I am offended, she cried. And not at the suggestion that she would pass off a faux Gucci bag as real, but offended that I mentioned the words African boys and knockoff goods. Everything is offensive. I think I said last night, identity group A, in a bid to outdo identity group B, will claim offence when identity group B refers to them in any way. That sounds kind of complicated, doesn't it? If you hear it like that. So person A is offended by person B referring to person A by their ethnicity or by their name or whatever. That's how it's gone. Don't refer to us. Don't speak about us, we will get triggered. And academic institutions and workplaces all over the world are not only tolerating this madness, they are legislating for it in their codes of practice, in their codes of conduct. In fact, society itself is legislating for the identitarian. There's a veritable stampede, isn't there? We've seen it. To change laws, to change language, to cater for the narcissist. To allow the identitarian live in the world of their imagining and on their terms. Exclusively on their terms. Now who benefits? Think about that. Who benefits if we evolve to this, if this continues at the pace we've seen it at the moment? Who benefits? More in a minute. So back to the academic Joanne Williams. Here she talks about the idea that the personal has become the political. The personal has become the political. And she explains how it's destroying learning. Listen up.
That slogan, the personal is political, and particularly the way that it's played out within academia, for example, basically said that any objective fact about the world is worthless compared to people's subjective experiences, and it's how people experience things in a very subjective way that counts. And obviously then you completely lose the ability to evaluate any concept, any knowledge, any political position, because it's all based on your feelings. It was really a case of bringing feelings into the classroom and feelings into politics. It's second wave feminists who really started this.
And feelings have no place. Emotions and feelings have no place in any discussion about the real, about the tangible, about politics. She blames feminists. I don't know if she's right there. Don't know a lot about feminism. I've interviewed feminists over the years. I've liked them. I've sympathised. with various campaigns run by feminists in terms of equality, particularly in media. I have no issue with feminists. I don't know if she's right, but it's a terrifying reality. You know, the personal becoming the political. And it kind of ushers in what we've been calling at the Richie Allen Show and DavidIke.com, what we've been calling a post-fact world, a post-fact reality. Facts become worthless. Truth becomes worthless. Subjectivity comes to rule. It doesn't matter what the truth is. You express your personal feelings on any issue. Your feelings become your truth. Ergo, your feelings become the truth. Your identity determines your point of view, not the cold, hard facts. It's devastating. I want you to listen to New York University Professor Professor Jonathan Haidt, again, about what's going on at universities. Now, he's in conversation with a man called Tom Woods. You'll hear Jonathan Haidt, the academic, first. Listen to this about what I was just talking about, universities.
There are many beliefs that are so central, so foundational, that if you try to argue against that, well, actually, what we see on campus, we see students saying that this would invalidate their existence. So if you were to try to argue that some cause of prejudice or racism was not real, or that disparities by race or gender had other causes, some would take this as an existential threat, an existential attack. You would be trying to invalidate their existence, which is an act of violence. So your very efforts to persuade with reasons are violence.
So because they look at it that way, they come to think of a debate, an open debate and free speech, as being these terms that sound neutral and sound like they're just advocating openness, but that actually the very fact that we're debating it means that we're denying their right to exist. Am I kind of getting it?
Yes, that's correct. And when I've had conversations like this with some groups of those students, I've been told that these norms of debate and civility, these were invented by white males, white European males. So what's interesting about the way discourse has changed, I think it's actually quite dangerous for free inquiry and for universities, and April has written brilliantly on this. The way it's changed is that certain norms that grow out of the Marxist tradition have been established on campus. And so one of them is what you might call the ad hominem albus argument. I just looked this up this morning. Albus is the Latin word for white. So, you know, we all know what an ad hominem argument is. It's not a valid form of argument. You reject, rather than arguing against what someone said, you say, yeah, well, you know, you're Jewish, therefore, or, you know, you're gay or whatever, so therefore I don't have to listen to you. And so what students are taught in many of their classes is start with an analysis of privilege. So who's the speaker? What are the speaker's motives? Is the speaker just defending his privilege?
Very good. There's no discussion based on the merits of the facts. Arguments are attacked based on who is making the argument, not on whether the person making the argument has got any, you know, has got a good argument, has got some hard, solid evidence. The arguments are attacked based on who is making the argument rather than on what is being argued. So what's the result of this? What do we see as a result of this? Again, New York University, Jonathan Haidt gives us an answer.
And if students learn to start every analysis with a privilege check and to dismiss arguments made by the privileged people and to emphasize arguments made by the victim people, they have more authenticity, they have more valid life experience. Well, if this is what they're learning in college, we're basically, I mean, we're teaching them to judge everybody by their race and sex. Are you serious? This is really what we're doing? Yes, this is what we are doing on campus. And so it's no surprise then that you cannot argue them out of a position. I'm not saying they could argue us out of a position. I'm not saying we're more rational. But at least, you know, you and I come from a tradition where if someone gives you an argument, you at least address yourself to the argument, not to the person.
Yes, simple as that. Meaning that rationality is defunct. Facts and reason are legitimate. So this is an evolution, and it is an evolution, not a revolution. And there is nothing positive about it. And as I said last night, And I said a few minutes ago, it's the most dangerous social shift of our time. And it's leading to the destruction of whatever media we had left. Now, I know media is impotent anyway. And the alternative media is just as much, if not more, impotent than the mainstream media. You won't like hearing that, but I don't care. It really is. We know why media has become what it is now, but we're seeing what's left of it being swept away as a result of the, shall we say, the hegemony of this identity politics, which is narcissism on steroids. As we've illustrated, radio presenters, journalists with national newspapers publicly humiliated for saying something which was fairly harmless, but was decreed harmful to one identity group or another. Logic, reason, common sense obliterated in a Twitter storm. Let's hear a bit more from Joanne Williams on this. This is good stuff.
I think we've got to be very, very careful about saying that personal experiences are facts. I think there are some personal things that are facts. You can look at how much someone gets paid. You could look at how many times they were stopped by the police. You could look at how much they have to pay for their mortgage or their rent, etc. And you can look at facts in that context. As soon as we move beyond facts that can be weighed and measured like that, we move into the subjective sphere, and then you blur the lines between the subjective and the objective. And it's because that has taken place so much that we can even ask questions like, how do we politicise the experiences of different groups? Which I think is an interesting question. And I think it's, like I say, a question which stems from the dominance of identity politics. I think identity politics just gets in the way of real politics. I think the most important word that's been said in this debate so far was said over here about universalism. To my mind, politics is about winning people over to your argument. I mean, that's democracy, essentially. It's about winning people over to what you think by having those arguments out with people. But if we're all just defined by our own individual experiences and everybody's individual experiences are so different, then you don't actually ever attempt to do that thing of winning people over to your argument. You're just respecting people for their personal experiences.
Yes, the politicisation of personal experience and politicising your own feelings. You're politicising your own feelings based on your imagining, your idea of your place in the world. That's what it is. We saw this with the young woman who was raped by the ex-Olympic swimmer. Feminists, progressives, politicised her experience. They politicised the experience of the girl who was sexually assaulted. And in doing so, destroyed the career of a radio presenter. There was nothing political about her experience. To her, it was very subjective. And I imagine it was very sickening and horrible. I don't want to imagine it. Must have been dreadful. For the rest of us, you're left with anger, outrage that a guy would take advantage of a drunk woman like that. But also, as it didn't happen to me or you, you look at it objectively. You see the wrongs of it. You want justice for the girl, but you're also left with a kind of a sad, resigned feeling of, Jesus, could have been avoided. He'll always be a dirty rapist. But the stone cold fact is, if the woman hadn't incapacitated herself by getting hammered, it probably wouldn't have happened to her. The bastard would most likely have done it to someone else, that's very possible. But she'd have been okay. But there's no room in this identity politics driven narcissistic culture rules society. There's no room for anything other than the politicisation of our personal feelings, our victimhood. A man is accused of victim blaming. He's effectively accused of having a heart of stone and no sympathy for the woman he's destroyed. So who benefits? It always comes back to cui bono. Who benefits when identity politics stroke narcissism thrives, when it becomes all pervasive, when people withdraw into themselves, when they withdraw into themselves and they see the world only from the point of view of their place in it. There's another argument to be made, and we could be here all day long as well. Eventually, these identity groups, if you follow along with what I've been talking about, eventually these groups will be destroyed. Because for the moment, you have people, and this is because I suppose the, you know, the addiction to mobile phones, tablets, Facebook, Twitter, social media, it isn't yet total. It's not total yet. It's not completely locked down yet. So while it isn't, people are still assigning themselves to the social groups. You know, the gay man, the lesbian woman, the transgender, the socialist, the alt-right, I'm a truther. But ultimately, if this goes, if this reaches what I believe will be its inevitable conclusion, people won't associate with any group. Ultimately, people will alienate themselves to the point of view that will be at that. I didn't predict it, but I said earlier on, you might reach sociopathy. It's a possibility. So when narcissism thrives, it's all pervasive. Those who wish to divide us along these lines are the ones who benefit. And I believe that's the only answer. Those who were behind the dissolution of national sovereignty, those behind the eradication of culture, or majority culture, as it might pertain to a particular nation. Diversity is a word you hear over and over again. It's a wonderful thing. It's a positive thing, we're told over and over again. It's what makes us great. It's what makes us special, really. A few months ago, Professor Frank Ferrady of Kent University spoke with me on this particular programme. You might remember him saying this, Frank Ferrady.
And you want to ask the question, well, how did diversity, which is an empirical fact, which basically means the many, turn into a moral value? What, why would the fact that there are many of us or many different groups in a particular geographical area be a value in and of itself? And when you kind of ask that question, you probe what is meant by diversity, what you find is it's got two important components. The first component is that it kind of attributes positive moral characteristics to identity and minority groups, that being part of a minority group and an identity group is somehow intrinsically of a serious moral worth. That's what the core value of diversity means. But what's very interesting is that in the attribution of a moral worth to minority groups, lifestyle groups, gender-based groups, ethnicity-related or religious groups, what you're leaving out of the picture is the question of what value do you place on the majority culture. And what's very fascinating to me is that diversity in general is extremely negative and scathing about majority cultures, the culture of a particular nation within which diversity exists. And therefore, in practice, the theory of diversity becomes a way of devaluing the cultural dynamic and the cultural content of national cultures.
Frank Ferrady, at the expense of majority culture. Fascinating. And just to touch on what I said a minute ago about the possibly the inevitable destruction of identity groups themselves or identity groups. You can see if it goes down its natural path that eventually the identity groups will disintegrate from within, because as people become more and more and more narcissistic and more convinced of their worth, their exceptionalism, you'll find, and we see this, and the so-called truther community is a perfect example of this, that the narcissism will destroy it from within. Not that it's a good thing that needs to be preserved. I don't believe it is. And if you want to look at the truther community as a identity group, I don't think there's anything important or anything good or anything valuable about the truther community. So if it is destroyed, from within by the narcissistic tendencies of those who identify with it. As they fight amongst themselves, it won't really matter. But that's where I believe it's all going, ultimately, anyway, as far as I can tell. It's 15 minutes to the top of the hour. I hope some of that made sense to you. There are a lot of tweets coming in during that, a lot of tweets. The follow what people are tweeting me, where it says search Twitter on the homepage for Twitter, put Richie Allen Show, all one word in, press enter, and you'll see what other people are tweeting to me, and you can debate with them and chat away with them there. I'm going to take a very quick break. Back in a minute with plenty more. David Shaler is our guest today. We'll be joining David in about 10 minutes' time. Looking forward to that. And as usual, questions for David through Twitter and email.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
Introducing the H2O app, a powerful water structuring application that programs vibrational energies into water through the use of different sound frequencies. Once programmed, the use of water for drinking, cooking, bathing. Give it to your friends and colleagues or spread it around the garden. The list goes on. It's not just water that the app can be used for either. It's great for programming crystals too. The H2O app is free to download and is available on both Android and Apple platforms. For further information, go to h2oapp.online.
There's a place high in the mountains of Spain, a sanctuary where souls gather from all around the globe to learn about themselves and experience powerful changes in the way we see our world. They become awakened to their gifts and their power to heal others. Become part of this ever-growing worldwide family of unique, pure energy healing practitioners. Discover how amazing you truly are. Go to www.markbajerski.com. It could just change your life forever.
Is your mind full of ideas, yet you struggle to put them down on paper? Characters with no home, unfinished concepts that you always wanted to finalize, yet lacked knowledge and drive to complete? The Creative Writing Course from Creative Imaginings may be the long-awaited answer. Designed to help you finish your masterpiece with better language techniques, detailed study of the character, plotted suspense chain, and valuable information to get published. Don't delay your creation. Sign up today. Email Sue on nassusproductions@gmail.com.
Broadcasting the information the mainstream media won't touch. This is the Richie Allen Show in association with davidicke.com.
A lot of tweets on this. Paul Sweeney says, they manage our thoughts and emotions. They are technical masters in this field. Their machinations are covert and clever. Peter McTwohill said, this is making his head spin. I'm going to have to listen back to what he says tomorrow. It's fairly simple, Peter. I sometimes am guilty, and I can take the criticism of maybe not explaining it as articulately as maybe I should do. But for me, as I've come to understand it, it's relatively straightforward. We are seeing increasingly, and you just have to look at your interactions with people on social media where most people are living. We are seeing how people have become inward looking. My friend and colleague Jean-Ann Crowley said that the parameters of what narcissism meant, used to mean, have shifted in a way. It's not just, you know, loving yourself, looking in the mirror. No, it's far deeper than that. Far, far deeper. Understanding it is fairly easy, I think, but it goes far, far deeper. You know, it is overwhelming society. It's breaking down, as I said earlier on, the ability people have to relate to people or to relate to the world other than how they see themselves in it. You know, personal feelings, most often feelings of injury, are replacing evidence and facts in terms of how people understand the world. People only understand the world based on their place in it, their importance in it. And like I said, to begin to understand it, the simplest way to begin to understand it is to look at how people deal with criticism, not in terms of you shouldn't have bought that shirt or that blouse or I don't like your haircut, but criticism in terms of I don't like what you're doing. I don't agree with what you believe. I don't think your reasoning on that particular issue is sound. That's where it's most evident. We've never seen anything like it before. The levels of anger, the vitriol, as I said earlier on, when people's views are challenged or when they see something or hear something that doesn't conform with their view of the world. Like I said, maybe that evolution doesn't stop with that type of narcissism. Maybe it goes on to something like sociopathy, maybe. But look, there you go. That's something I've been, you know, as I said, been thinking a lot about. I think it's absolutely huge. Right, it's exactly 9 minutes to the top of the hour. Let's take some music. When we come back from that, David Shaler joins the programme. He's just made contact. We'll be live with him. I don't think you want to miss this.
Like no other.
Flawless, absolutely flawless. Flawless, absolutely flawless. Flawless, absolutely flawless.
Beautiful.
Flawless, absolutely flawless.
And it's no good waiting by the window. It's no good waiting for the sun.
Flawless.
Please believe me, things you dream of, they don't fall in the
hands
of no one.
Absolutely flawless.
And it's no good, and it's no good waiting.
Flawless.
Waiting.
Absolutely flawless.
And it's no good, and it's no good waiting.
Michael Flawless on the Richie Allen Show, 6 minutes to the top of the hour. Welcome to the programme if you're just joining it. It's good to be with you, 21st of September 2017, Thursday's programme. Don't forget, Jamie will be here tomorrow. We don't do things on Fridays. We don't do shows on Fridays. Jamie will be here tomorrow with Jamie Ike's Friday Night. He'll be taking your phone calls. He's got a very special guest. That's from 7 p.m. Do contact Jamie on Skype. The phone number to the studio, it's not open now, don't ring it now. It's 0161 in Manchester, 408-2017, that's the one. Give you all those details tomorrow, Jamie will anyway. Right, let's move on. I love listening to our next guest. He's been on the programme several times before. You have a lot of time for him whenever he comes on. You get excited, sending in questions and comments. Got in touch with him today. It's been a lot in the papers over the last couple of weeks about stellar, I shouldn't say stellar, should I? Galactic happenings, solar system happenings. We've heard from people like David Mead. Got in touch with David Mead, by the way. I don't think he trusted me. I don't think he knew very much about me, and he didn't trust that I would take what he was saying seriously. And of course, I take what everybody says seriously. Nobody gets mocked or laughed at on this programme. What the hell do I know is my philosophy when it comes to life. But a lot of conservative Christians talking about the recent weather phenomena and the earthquakes. And to say weather phenomena, I suppose, is to be using understatements. The Caribbean and Southeast United States has been battered for weeks. It's dreadful. Dominica getting a battering today. So I gave my old mate David Shaler a ring. Now, David doesn't necessarily believe the world is going to end on Saturday, but he's a very learned man, former MI5 agent. Bookmark his website, by the way, bookofthelaw.org, bookofthelaw.org. And he takes a keen interest in these happenings, in celestial, that's the word, celestial happenings. But also, David is very well researched into areas concerning the Bible, and the Bible may have been encoded with clues to who we really are and where we're really going. It's great to welcome back to the programme our mate David Shaler. David, welcome back.
Thanks for that, Richie. Hi, great to be on the show again.
It's great to have you back. Bookofthelaw.org, folks. Those issues on bookofthelaw.org. We'll be getting into those with David in future programmes, but do check out that website. It's looking good there. I have a question for you, sir, straight in there. From a lovely woman called Natalie Stacey, who runs a bar down south. She's lovely as Natalie. She says, Richie, ask David for clarification on the fact that the Bible literally says repeatedly and explicitly that man will not know at all the time or the date of the rapture or the beginning of the end times, that we need to watch for the signs, which are debatable and subjectively interpretable. In fact, they encourage the latter. The Bible encourages to watch for the signs rather than giving us all the answers. That's a bloody good question by Natalie. What say you, my friend?
She's absolutely right. The Bible does give us the signs. It does encode this stuff. In the past, obviously, people have tried to understand those signs. But the truth of spiritual teaching, of course, is if you truly live in love, you raise your vibration, you change the frequency of your receiver, and therefore when you see the signs, you come to correctly understand them and correctly decode them. I always say that one of the problems with liberals is quite often the arguments they make might be good, but you could have a good key that works in a lock and a good lock that can be undone, but not every key works in every lock. You've still got to have the right key to unlock the right door, basically. And that's a metaphor at the moment, because when we come to these end times, you can look at all these codes and stuff like that, but really what you need, of course, is the key to get through. And that key, obviously, is love. It's not in the veneration of objects or the worship of personalities or people or anything else. It's just in that love in your heart. And God obviously doesn't demand that you do that all the time, and if you don't do it, you're going to be damned forever. Of course not. We live under a very merciful and loving God. So it's about that effort of trying to go on that journey to show you some grit and determination in your heart to be able to do that.
Really interesting stuff this, David. It really is. A lot of questions are coming in about this, and we'll get to as many of them and as many comments as we possibly can. I have a lot of empathy for people. I don't like to laugh at people and mock people. And I've met conservative Christians over the years, or from various denominations in the States, through programs like this, and they very keenly and very sincerely said to me, Richie, I'm pretty sure that, you know, 2009 or 2011, this is going to happen and that's going to happen. And when those things don't happen, I don't, you know, dismiss out of hand the validity of the person whom I spoke with, or, you know, I don't imagine that they're as soppy, you know, as a box of frogs. I don't at all. I just think, do you know, I used to think that with a lot of people very committed to Christianity and, you know, very vocal about it, that the world is such a horrendous place and serves up such horrendous things, that I used to think that a lot of these people are kind of willing it to come to an end. And if they believe in a benevolent creator where, you know, where at the end times everything is going to be okay, I could understand them willing this time to finally arrive, David. I don't know if you know what I'm getting at.
Yeah, obviously there have been many, many predictions of the end times over millennia. You know, we're not obviously the first culture to encounter something like this. But as I say, it's the wideness of the nature of this prophecy. Because I haven't just stuck to the Judeo-Christian prophecy. I've gone into researching other cultures, into looking at the Chinese. But even you realise that the Hopi Indians hold the idea of an end times, the Eskimos, they all hold this idea that there will be a time when it will be very dark, humanity will be tested, people won't know of God, there'll be the worship of false idols and evil people. And, you know, we've lived through that, obviously, you know, in my lifetime, but certainly, obviously, since 9/11. And I think it's very hard to think about this when you know history and so on, to think of a time of so much evil and so much duplicity. I think it was Orwell who said, in a time of universal deceit, telling the truth becomes a revolutionary act. And I feel that, you know, I'm teaching traditional wisdom, but we're so departed from our traditional wisdom that that has become radical again. And actually, the Bible is a radical document because it talks about things like land rights, which you never get the liberals or the left talking about. And I think that's what we're signaling at this point, by the way. I mean, obviously, I've tried to make the sense of this day to the 23rd of September. People have said it's to do with an alignment in the heavens that's predicted in Revelation in terms of Jupiter going along the birth canal of the constellation Virgo. And this is the woman surrounded by 12 stars. Obviously, another interpretation of a woman surrounded by 12 stars giving birth. You only have to look at the British Isles and you'll see, I've seen certainly, and I can draw it out for people, the shape of a pregnant woman there being hit over the head, basically.
Right.
And she's surrounded by 12 stars because the European Union's original flag was 12 stars. So these things can have obviously many different interpretations. And it wasn't really the alignment in the heavens that drew me to that, although there's a clue in the book of Revelation at that point because it talks about 1,260 days. Now, those codes, that's a very simple rearrangement to give us the year 2016. And obviously, you are in 2017, but there's a slight discrepancy between the Hebrew and the Roman years, basically, about when New Year is. So we could technically still be in 2016. There's no year zero either. So it's indicating around this time. But what I was also attracted to were the hidden codes, basically. It was a code that's originally in Leviticus, in which it's talking about 7 times 7 weeks. And obviously people then try and time these together like they've done with Daniel. They'll say, oh, the prophecy's going to happen here. It's not. It's taking those things out and making them into dates. And there's a 5 there as well. So you've got 5777, where today is, in fact, just sun gone down now. It's the new year, the end of 5777. But it's the first time we've gone into September, basically, in the new year. It's the 7th month. That's the other 7 from there. So that was actually in Leviticus. But I also took that out and put it in the 3rd and Final Testament, part 2. And in part 3 of the 3rd and Final Testament, the action kind of begins on the 21st of September and ends on, and the opening ends on the 27th of September. The 23rd is a day that's described in detail. Then the next day, the 24th, is not mentioned at all. And obviously part of the prophecy is said in the Bible, but it's in other cultures, is the idea there either was or will be some kind of day when the sun may stand still or something that's going to happen. So it could be the fulfillment of that prophecy in Joshua. Who knows? I mean, certainly what I've seen and what I've read, this is the day of the Lord that is prophesied in the Bible. It appears and say, God tells me he's coming back. Now, obviously, I've got to think, what form is that going to take? And I think in this situation, we're going to very least be visited with the Holy Spirit, that many people on the planet who've done the spiritual work, who haven't succumbed to temptation, will now know the, what it's like to be filled with God's love. And we'll be going on a, you know, the journey, more and more of the journey. Obviously, other people who haven't taken that option will be feeling the sting of bad karma. But even then, I say it's a merciful God, so I don't predict, you know, anything bad happening initially. I think almost there'll be this thing where people will be literally having this awakening and thinking, why? Why have I been involved in this system? This is crazy. This is insane. I've got to get out of this, basically. So that's the kind of shift I think in consciousness we'll see to start with. But who knows in this game? You never know. It may be that Jesus does suddenly materialize and tell people, like, you know, look, I'm here and everything that's been said is true. And now you've got to change your ways, mankind. If you carry on like this, you're going to finish up in a very dark place.
Loads of tweets, as I said, on this. David Scheller is our guest. Gojira tweets that there's a slight discrepancy called the Reformation. What year is it, asks Gojira, the Reformation?
Yeah, well, the calendar doesn't really matter. I mean, God can see the future, basically. So he knows the calendar dates in Hebrew and Anno Domini. So none of those things are a problem. I've seen human beings try and shift the dates, allowing for the year zero. But that hasn't worked. Newton works it out. He clearly arrives at the same numbers as me. He rearranged them as 2060, which, of course, it could be arranged into if you've allowed for the year zero, otherwise 2061. But I say 2016. And I think partly the insight I've been given has been unique. I was at Runnymede for the night of the 20th, 21st of December, and I was kind of worrying about the Book of Revelation and the stars going out and things like this. And that night I was up very late, and I can tell you in the sky I saw what I can only describe as, or had been described to me as, the white hole of consciousness I had to look out for. And the stars did go out. They went out for about 3 seconds and came back on again. And we'd somehow in that process, although what we saw in front of us hadn't physically changed, the makeup behind that, the hard wiring, the software programs and so on, had changed, basically. And that's why we've seen what has happened since 2012, which is essentially more and more people seeing the truth about things, more and more people living in love, more and more people wanting to get back into harmony with nature. But we've seen the dark side battle us absolutely tooth and nail every inch of the journey to try and stop that happening. But that's failed. You know, this multi-trillion dollar concern with its finger in every pie, you know, staffed by psychopaths who'll stop at nothing. They failed, basically, and they're going to have to either now repent or go through the bad karma for their terrible actions of murdering and making millions of people suffer.
We've had a tweet from Catherine, and it's a biblical verse. I don't know which part of the scripture it's from. I don't expect you to know either, my friend. I'm not testing you at all, but she's just sent me this. It's on a meme, and the meme shows a picture of a woman taking a selfie. And the Bible scripture, the passage is, "But mark this, there will be terrible times in the last days. People will be lovers of themselves, lovers of money, boastful, proud, abusive, disobedient to their parents, ungrateful, unholy, without love, unforgiving, slanderous, without self-control, brutal, not lovers of the good, treacherous, rash, conceited, lovers of pleasure rather than lovers of God." Now, she intimates this is some passage from the Bible. We're seeing that.
I'm pretty sure that's from, it's either Daniel or Isaiah, I think it is. But that's what we've already seen. You know, anybody who's had their eyes open for the last 20 years has seen all this going on. The enormous injustice of 9/11 essentially being carried out by a conspiracy of Mossad and CIA members, then it being blamed on innocent people the other side of the world. That is an enormous injustice. And so we think of the suffering that's created, and then all the wars after that, the displacements of people. But on top of that, of course, we've had the poison of our skies with chemtrails, the poison of our food, the attempts to genetically modify it, the attempts to work people to death. So we have seen the Babylon working as hard as it can to make people evil almost by default, to make them so desperate that they have to acquire for themselves, and they become selfish and and not able to share and so on. So, yeah, they've done everything they can to make these times dark. But the same, we're now coming through it. The people who truly believe in love and have had some insight into God will know his love, basically. And those who've selfishly acquired for themselves, who, you know, lived a vapid life, who've contributed to evil and, you know, say paying the mortgage and paying taxes have been contributing to evil, you know. So those people are going to have to go through a process of repentance. That's not beating yourself up. That's having that insight, that epiphany, and suddenly thinking what I'm doing is wrong. I'm not going to do that again. I'd rather suffer indignities and suffer losses myself than contribute to something that's causing severe harm and mutilation and death to my fellow human beings, basically.
I'll tell you where this is really genuinely fascinating stuff. I'm aware that I sometimes say to my guests it's fascinating, and it can sound a bit cliched and a bit trite, but it's hugely fascinating and interesting to me. This, my take on a creator, it might differ slightly from yours. It's in no way you know me thinking that I really have any understanding. I don't, but I do subscribe to the idea that we are infinite consciousness, infinite awareness, and that this experience we're having here on this planet mightn't be real. The experience itself mightn't be real. It might be simulated. But I have to subscribe to the idea that our energy, even though, of course, the physicists say that, you know, energy can't be created and it can't be destroyed, but infinite awareness, maybe we were created. Is it fair to say that those who would look at you and look at me and say, your belief in a benevolent creator lends to stagnation, that ultimately you're not going to do anything about the tyranny, the injustice, the murder, the brutality on Earth, because ultimately you believe that there, you know, a rapture is going to happen and the creator is going to sort the, you know, the good from the bad, and that brings about a sort of a stagnation and inactivity on our part. When people say that, and I know it's been said before, how do you react to that?
Well, I'd say it's obviously a false teaching. If you look at Sermon on the Mount, if you look at the commands of the law, it's all about standing up for truth and justice, ensuring peace. And if you're persecuted, carrying on standing up for that truth. You know, it's been one of these sort of new age perverted teachings that we all just, oh, it's all just an illusion. There's a creator. It's all going to be fine. Anybody who says the world is an illusion, Bishop Barclay used to kick them in the shins. And I recommend you do that to anybody who says that to you. Because obviously you're proving a point there that the pain is very real. There is an idea. This is a kind of copy of the world to allow this experiment of in good and evil to take place. I can agree with that, that this is not absolute reality, that the world of the gods is actually the true world. But I say the pain we feel here is very real. Things like death look very real.
Yes.
And that's why we've been particularly challenged here. But God's command to us is that we love our neighbour as we love ourselves. So therefore, we have a duty to go and deal with suffering. If we see people being persecuted and so on, we stand against that persecution. That is how you get good karma. Those who sit by the sidelines thinking they can sit on the fence, as you know, liberal types do, you can't do that in the eternal war of good and evil. There is no neutrality. A principle of law says those who do not disapprove approve. So basically your position is, if you're not doing anything, you're consenting to the mainstream evil. You have to actually be up and off your ass and physically standing up to this evil and trying to expose it and denounce it and try and bring it to an end, to actually show that you're against it. So it does require an action on your part. You can't be passive about this.
And support.
This is all basic traditional spiritual teaching. This is true Bible teaching. The New Age teachings we get at the moment were invented in 1947 by something called the Lucifer Trust, an offshoot of the UN, since rechristened, of course, the Lucis Trust, so it doesn't sound quite as satanic. But nevertheless, a lot of the darkness I hear about spiritual teachings you trace back to there. They try to pretend it's some old pagan tradition. It's not. It's largely the work of Madame Blavatsky and her cohorts in the 19th century. When you look at old pagan belief systems, they say they believed in a chosen one of God. They believed in end times. They believed that you were responsible for your actions, basically. Those are the eternal human truths. And anybody who's telling you something different from that is somebody who clearly hasn't seen it as clearly as you have, so don't listen to them.
I couldn't argue with any of that. Well, I'm going to do the academic thing, David. I'm going to do the could it be argued. I love this. I was reminded by a friend of mine some weeks back. He said, because I have a lot of faults, me, a lot of things about me that are not good, but a friend of mine said to me, one of the things I've always liked about you, Richie, going back over the years, you were always very much, could it be argued? You were never very dogmatic about your points of view. I'm going to put this point of view to you, David. David Shaler is live on the line, by the way, former MI5 agent, very, very courageous man, who's acted out what he's been talking about there, telling the truth about the Iraq war, about spying, about Libya, about Gaddafi, the attempts to murder Gaddafi, everything that he did in his career. He stood by the principles that he's espousing on this programme tonight, so I admire that. I'm going to put something to you. You've talked about all these different cultures who tell very different stories. Well, it appears very different stories, but in fact, they're not. They're similar, about a benevolent creator, a source of some kind, and how there's been a perversion or an interference between that creator and us and our consciousness. Some people say that's the devil. Some people say it's something else. So could it be argued that, I mean, you kind of equated the idea that this might be a simulation with New Age. You know, I would argue vigorously against that because I'm as far from New Age as you can get. I can't stand New Age. But I've come to believe, and it's not because Ikey told me that it's true. I used to seriously, seriously disagree with this some years ago. I really was vehemently opposed to it. But could it be argued that what some people see as God is the source of the energy, the infinite awareness, and that what cultures see as the devil is that interference, that malevolence that has created this this warped reality to kind of imprison us in? Because that's kind of where I'm coming from. Is there an argument to be made from that?
I can answer that, because obviously there's many ideas about what is God. The idea that we think the Abrahamic religions, Islam and Judaism and Christianity, are monotheistic. This is not right. They're not monotheistic. The Bible is not a monotheistic document. The God who creates the heaven and earth at the beginning is a different God from the one who's guiding the Israelites across the desert. So you've clearly got two gods there to start with. So it's not monotheistic. What you've got to understand is that a God without form, at one point, about 15.7 billion years ago, takes form, basically. That's the Immaculate Conception. That's something from nothing. That is the miracle, basically. And from that process of creation evolves a creator who creates a blueprint known to us as the Torah. The arrangement of those Hebrew letters is the blueprint for creation. And he says, let there be light. He says it. That's the Big Bang. The light is the big flash. That is the beginning. But the principle that goes out from there, the greatest principle, is the principle of compassion. That what you put out is what you'll get back. This is, in the Indians, they will call this Om. And some people say, even scientists say, they've recorded this. The background Om of creation has been physically recorded, the sound of the Big Bang. But we know this from Kabbalah, that Om is about compassion. And I say it creates this universal rule that what you put out is what you get back, basically. So that is karma in a nutshell. You put out evil, you get back evil. You put out good, you get back good. But also in this process of creation, we have a pourer and a vessel. It's probably the best way to describe it without making it in any way contextual specific or to a father or mother or anything else. Let's see this as a pourer and a vessel. And while the pourer is pouring out love, and the vessel is receiving, has the capacity to receive that love, it's all okay. But if that vessel is then given free will, as it must have to truly love, it can choose not to receive what is poured. That is the beginning of the disorder. And from that disorder, as it amplifies across creation, becomes evil. So, yes, it's a byproduct of God's creation, but it is one that's been absolutely necessary for free will to mean anything at all.
Can I ask a question on that? Sorry to interrupt you, my friend, but if I don't ask, it'll lose context as we move on. So there are so many questions coming out of this. Mary has sent me an email. It's to the right of me. I'm straining. I need to get my glasses changed. But it's about time not being linear. We'll come back to that because that's interesting. Has everything that ever came to be, does it have an opposite? So you have night and day, light and dark. If this being, you said 15 or so billion years ago, came into existence and it, you know, was pure. I don't want to use trite words like pure, but if it was good or a force for good, was something born at the same time that was dark, that was malevolent? And do we see evidence of this through the centuries, through ancient Egypt, ancient Rome, the Aztecs? Do we see evidence of a good and a bad energy? And has that bad energy manifested through millennia, through various cultures as different things? The archons, as we learned about, the jinn, interdimensional entities. People are asking me these things because a lot of our audience believe very passionately in that good and that very, very evil entity coming into being at the same time. What do you think?
No, they don't. The good and evil don't come into being at the same time. As I was saying, you get the pourer and the vessel, and that sets off a vibration across creation when the vessel is not receiving according to the pourer, basically. So it's much later that we start to see the incarnation of what is called evil, but really, actually, evil is ignorance. It begins from fear, and it's that fear that where the universe is not a just place, that we are not loved by God, that there is, it's basically just a big bear fight, you know, roaring tooth and claw, basically. So that is the beginning of all of that. That is the beginning of evil. It's not set out as a strategy or a plan. It's the kind of byproduct. Now, obviously, in this incarnation we're in now as human beings, we've taken our most animalistic incarnation. We've been blocked off from our DNA, which shows us ancient knowledge and so on, that normally we would be born with in previous advanced societies. We've been deliberately cut off to be like this. But this is deliberate because it's cutting us off from that knowledge, so it becomes a greater journey of faith again. And again, people think I'm talking fanciful here. You've only got to look at the work of someone like Lloyd Pye, and he will show you the capacity of the human brain has clearly been pinned back by somebody. That's not a genetic mutation that would give you an advantage. Clearly somebody's done that to us in an attempt to try and dumb us down, but it's backfired.
David, I used to love Lloyd. Lloyd used to come on the programmes with me in Spain round about the first time.
Man.
Yeah, he was a lovely fella, Lloyd. Rest in peace. For our listeners who don't know, look up Lloyd Pye, P-Y-E, and a Star Child skull. There was never a more sincere and honest man than Lloyd Pye. Whatever the skull was, Lloyd wasn't pulling the wool over anybody's eyes. He passionately believed that it was otherworldly and something of other intelligence. There's no doubt about that. Really interesting guy. Jean Ann tweets, cosmic intelligence is a much better word than God to describe the infinite unknown. Maybe humanity was an experiment that has gone sadly wrong.
Can I fundamentally disagree with that?
Of course you can. That's why you're here, to argue with us.
To depersonalize God is wrong, basically. That, you know, people want to say, oh, it's just a computer and things like this. It's a consciousness. As we are primarily a consciousness, we're wearing these terrible man suits at the moment because we're going through a process of being tested. But nevertheless, what you are ultimately is a consciousness, a soul. So is God. Therefore, that soul has a personality about it. In the creation story, I come down to after we talk about creation as essence, we have creation as matter, the Big Bang, the Big Flash. And then we have the evolution of souls, basically. We call them gods. The one true God in Kabbalah is known as Jesus, but there are other gods, Mary, Gaia, Adonai. Anybody who knows their pagan cultures will know there's different names of the gods for the four points, the cardinal points of the compass, but they're just the same gods. You can correlate the Greek and Roman gods to what goes on. And even with Jesus, you know, what I've done with my research, I really must mention, people talked about the return of Nibiru. Nibiru is just a transliteration of the Hebrew word for prophecy. And what they were prophesying when you talk about the Sumerians with Nibiru was not a planet. That was what Sitchin was telling us. They were telling us about the return of a god. And the god is the equivalent of Jupiter, is the equivalent of Jesus. So this is an example of a non-Judeo-Christian culture talking about exactly the same god returning. And his time of year is the autumn equinox, which, of course, September the 23rd also is. So that's confirmation of the prophecy from elsewhere. But say the gods are take physical form. They're on a different frequency from us. They're not puffs of smoke. They're physical beings with two legs and two arms and a head and a body, basically.
To be fair to Jean Anne, now
they're made out, they're just not made out of flesh and blood.
Now, to be fair, hang on a sec. To be fair to Jean Anne, she never suggested in her tweet that you know, God is a computer. Cosmic intelligence doesn't immediately lend to the idea of a computer. Cosmic intelligence could mean exactly what you described, an all pervasive energy presence, consciousness, as you described it, that was always there. I think that's the point she was making.
Got a slight problem with the word intelligence, not because I was an intelligence officer, but because it's always used for things like intelligence tests, and that's the benchmark in Babylon of intelligence, when all it's really about is almost your test of your computer processing power. The true test of any human being is their wisdom, their heart, their compassion, their ability to understand someone else's situation, but also to understand whether that situation is justified or not. You know, being able to look, put yourself in the shoes of someone who's being offended and thinking, well, oh yeah, okay, I wouldn't like to be offended. But at the same time, I wouldn't want to see someone going to prison for offending me. I wouldn't want to stop free speech from me being offended. So you apply the process of both compassion and wisdom. So that's why I don't like the intelligence. I prefer to call it the great cosmic play, or playwright, or something like that, or comedian, basically. That, you know, God is more a novelist than an architect, as the Freemasons would have it. There's far more fun and playfulness in the God Jesus than we could ever imagine. Jesus loves a good carry-on film. He loves a good pun. Likes the simple moral of a carry-on film, that, you know, the lecherous guys don't get the girl, the good guys do, and the people who are exposed are the hypocrites, the people who hold false values, basically.
Tell you what we're going to do. Tell you what we're going to do, very briefly.
Simple morality. I get very worried about a lot of the teachings about the universe, because people seem to want to complicate it, and quite often I find a lot of teachers out there in the New Age who ask them a few questions. It's obvious they don't really understand their own teachings.
Well, I'm going to take a very quick break for 3 minutes. When we come back, I'm going to challenge that. I'm going to challenge the idea that any of us could possibly have any real idea of what it is. And you're going to let me, and then when I'm finished, you can jump in. Delighted that David Chaler is back on the programme. Do go to bookofthelaw.org. We will talk about common law and the law as it pertains to you and your everyday life on a program we'll do very soon. We've got 3 minutes, David. If you want to grab a glass of water or a quick cuppa, we'll do that. Then we'll come back with more from David Chaler on your Richie Allen Show in association with davidicke.com for Thursday, September 21st, 2017.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
Introducing the H2O app, a powerful water structuring application that programs vibrational energies into water through the use of different sound frequencies. Once programmed, the use of water for drinking, cooking, bathing. Give it to your friends and colleagues, or spread it around the garden. The list goes on. It's not just water that the app can be used for either. It's great for programming crystals too. The H2O app is free to download and is available on both Android and Apple platforms. For further information, go to h2oapp.online.
This
a place high in the mountains of Spain, a sanctuary where souls gather from all around the globe to learn about themselves and experience powerful changes in the way we see our world. They become awakened to their gifts and their power to heal others. Become part of this ever-growing worldwide family of unique, pure energy healing practitioners. Discover how amazing you truly are. Go to www.markbajerski.com. It could just change your life forever.
Is your mind full of ideas, yet you struggle to put them down on paper? Characters with no home, unfinished concepts that you always wanted to finalize, yet lacked knowledge and drive to complete? The Creative Writing Course from Creative Imaginings may be the long-awaited answer. Designed to help you finish your masterpiece with better language techniques, detailed study of the character, plotted suspense chain, and valuable information to get published. Don't delay your creation. Sign up today. Email Sue on nassusproductions@gmail.com.
Broadcasting the information the mainstream media won't touch. This is The Richie Allen Show in association with DavidIke.com.
Welcome back to the program. It's exactly 1:30 the hour. We've got David for another 15 to 20 minutes. A lot of tweets on this. Hi to Anne Selly in Cheltenham. Patrick Garrett says, Richie, as we go through life, we gain knowledge. We only have wisdom when we put that knowledge into action. That's Pat. Colm in Dublin tweets, there's only one question of validity. Who, say you, is Christ? The prince of this world would have you not believe in him. Presumably, Colm means the prince of this world is the prince of darkness. And the prince of darkness would have us not to believe in him. That's from Colm. Thanks so much for the tweets. Bookofthelaw.org is David's website. David, thanks for staying with us. Just want to put a couple of quick things to you, and the floor is yours again. I had many conversations over the years with a theologian called Bob Price, a well-known theologian in America, was a reverend, was a minister for very many years, believes in God, or believes in a God of sorts. Really lovely fella, really humble and up for a good debate. Many conversations with him. A couple of things Bob used to say to me, and it was that there is an argument to be made that no civilization in history, no ancient civilization, no modern civilization, has any real understanding of what the source is, the Godhead, the God figure. And now what we do, and it's what kind of makes us human, is we create a narrative around what it is out of our complete lack of understanding of what it is. And that's a very interesting thing. And it could be argued that there's some merits to that. And I've also spoken to a number of people recently who say that, you know, again, about time and history, the time might not be linear, and that I know you're going to laugh at this, but no one knew you won't laugh because you're respectful, but that some future version of ourselves may have given life to us or created us. These are interesting theories. You did laugh, fair enough. The first point...
I'm laughing at the idea that our future selves could create us. It's a logical absurdity, isn't it, basically?
It is, but the idea that God always existed, which a lot of Christians believe, is also absurd, isn't it?
If they weren't there to create us.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's look, a logical fallacy. Exactly. I like to say to people that nobody's come back from the future because the future hasn't happened yet. That time is linear, but it's in a spiral. Now, if you imagine that spiraling out from creation, and imagine then an energy is shot out from creation, say, of revolution. So every time the spiral goes round that line, it hits a revolution. So we have a revolution. But of course, we're not at the same point on that line because it's a spiral. We're going further out. So we've all evolved a bit in terms of consciousness. We go through the experience again. Don't learn all the lessons, but perhaps learn a few more. So that's a very good example of how it works. It is linear, but there are repetitive things going on because of the lines going through the spiral. When we hit one of those energy points, we get similar things happening. Obviously, there's more than one coming out. This is very, very complex. So when you get confluences, of course, you'll get bigger revolutions or more cataclysmic events. You know, we think we all agree now there was a flood around 10,500 BC. There was another big one around 5,500 BC, then another one about 2000 BC, basically. I think that people agree on that now. Even science more or less agrees on that. Sorry, I lost my thread there.
No, it's good. Well, one of the things that science is very open to these days is the idea that this is a simulation of sorts. It's a holographic construct. And, of course, I spent 45 minutes talking about narcissism and identity politics earlier on, so I don't want to go anywhere near that, especially talking to you, because you don't fit any of that. Anyway, I mean, you're very open-minded and respectful of other people's opinions. When scientists say these things, of course, people go, oh, you can't trust scientists, you can't trust NASA. But scientists, some of them, including one or two who've been on this programme, Rich Terrile, famous NASA scientist, has been on this programme, they're more and more open to ripping up everything that they ever held sacred. Their physicist books, their beliefs, and they're saying, we're seeing more and more and more and more evidence that this is not reality, that it's something vastly different in reality. And mathematical equations, and again, you might laugh at this, but they say, you know, mathematics is close to proven that it's some sort of holographic construct, a prison planet, if you will. But you see, I don't think that what you believe, David, is mutually exclusive from that. I really don't.
No, I do believe the idea, Richard, that this is not reality, essentially. It is not true reality. It has been created as a realm of 1% light and 99% darkness to truly test the souls who all came here voluntarily to play this game, basically. And it is a game, because if you truly do love, you come to understand the nature of the loving God, and therefore know what the right behavior is, and therefore you come to be redeemed. You have absolutely nothing to worry if you live in love, you say. You come to understand God that way. A lot of people who say that God is the construct of man are just simply people that God has never spoken to, because they're not people that God has wanted to speak to.
Yeah.
You know, I'd say I have contact with God on a daily basis. That's been further apart and closer at times, but it's always involved playfulness and fun. There's been times when I've had to go through things, but on the whole, God's warned me about that beforehand. So that's why I say I'm going big on this 23rd of September, is that it's not just all the codes I'm seeing it. I'm getting this off the big man himself. And that's the message I'm here to deliver. And so people know I went through an awakening 10 years ago, in which I was shown that I was the chosen one of God, obviously known as Jesus Christ in the West, but by a variety of names, by different cultures, prophesied by a variety of cultures over a number of a millennia. And I've done the work of that chosen one by essentially teaching the law, showing how the law is a higher law than in their system. And I just must mention, actually, the final coda in that is that the way to stop paying your mortgage, you can use my system or you could use their common law. I researched J.P. Morgan. Yes, that J.P. Morgan in the 19th century is a witness in a case in which a man is saying a mortgage is not a contract. And J.P. Morgan gets up and swears all that under oath. So we have it under oath on a witness stand from the U.S., the man who set up the Federal Reserve, saying that what they do in terms of mortgages was creating money out of thin air, effectively, and they had no backing from the Constitution to do that. Now, obviously, he wasn't charged with fraud. So what form of law were they using? They were using their form of perverted common law, small c, small l, which allows both human beings and corporations to own property, essentially. So it's all now property law. And they're saying that as the creators of that property, they are the natural possessors of it. However, they can't create that property without your signature. You are therefore an absolutely vital part of the creation of that property. So under their common law, under no other contract, because there's no contract there, you're entitled to half that property. So what people now have to do is write to the mortgage company and say, you entered into this under false pretenses. You entered into it fraudulently. You failed to tell me about my property rights here. I am now invoking those property rights. So I want to see half of that sum of money, but I also want to see paid back to me the money I've been paying you in mortgage. And I'm also going to write to the police and the Financial Services Authority to alert them to this fraud. And if you don't pay me the money, I will write to the stock exchange and say that you can't, this company can't pay its bills anymore.
You know what I'm going to say now, don't you? I don't dispute any of that. And we'll get into this in a future program. We'll get into this specifically because listeners are always asking me to get into it. And then I sigh and then I groan. Not because I don't want to talk to you or talk to you about this, because I do, but because I know the inevitable conclusion is the corrupt judicial system in this country, they just ignore it.
Yeah, but this avoids that judicial system, basically. This is something they've set up for us slaves. This is not the slave system. This is a different system, but still nevertheless within their wider international thing. But it's their common law, basically. And they've got nowhere else to go because what else argument can they use? You've clearly joined it into this as co-creators. They can't create the mortgage without your signature. Yeah, you have to sign the dotted line, then they create the money. You have played a vital role in the creation of that property.
But they will ignore that, won't they?
That. And also under their system, you can't actually go to court. This is the funny thing about their common law behind the scenes. They say to go to court is to be in dishonor, and therefore no one can go to court. So they can't actually do anything to get the money off you. And that's obviously what we're trying to do, is stop people paying the mortgage. So it puts them in a kind of stalemate, checkmate position. There's nothing they can do. And of course, we should be using this with the government as well, because the argument works for the national debt. The government, on behalf of the nation, was the co-creator of the national debt. And therefore, they should be demanding half that money back off the banks and the money back they've been paying in terms of paying back the principal and paying the interest. So this will be a real test. I mean, people can get behind this. This is not even God's law. This is purely man's law. And applying that in an original way, but in a way that they cannot argue against. And if people have got the balls, now is the time to do this, send this letter off. And I was watching today, watching the mainstream telly for a change, and there's always people on there who want to get paid more money and this sort of thing. But there's no money in the pot. So, but if you stop paying your mortgage, of course, it's advantage you again, because you don't have to work God knows how many days every month simply to keep a roof over your head. You're suddenly freed up. You don't have to work as hard. So that is the single thing, again, that will change everything. It has to happen. It's, you know, we can't carry on the way we are. We can't carry on with this pursuit of an ever-growing economy. It's been a fallacy for many years now that our economy really has been growing. It's been relying on the rise in house prices. But that, of course, that's not a true rise in production. That's actually leeching money from the common pool, the commonwealth, and taking off the poorest people. So
yeah, like
the solution's been put forward by trade unionists, liberals, and so on. There's no money to pay these people any more money. We can't do that. What we can do is stop people paying the bankers, and that'll quickly change things.
Well, it's like John Perkins calls it a death economy, and we will get into that in the future. And I will rigorously challenge, as I have done in the past, what you're saying, because ultimately, whether it's true or not, and I happen to think from looking through your website in the past, you have the evidence. But expecting tyrants to just say, you know, oh, you're right, David, and you know, or Mr. Smith or Mrs. Murphy, oh, you're okay, you can keep the house. That's a different thing. Now, I don't want to get into that because we're about to run out of time. What I do want to get into, because we are fair here and we like people like David Shaler, but we're also mindful of representing those people who don't agree with our guests. And Alan has sent me an email. This is a genuine email. I'll forward it on to you. And he said, I'm very interested in David. I read all about David many years ago, the great things he did when he blew the whistle on the malfeasance at MI5. But when David talks about being the son of God and being chosen, it comes across to a lot of people as religious mania. David won't like hearing that, says Alan in his email, but that's how it comes across. David, surely, as a very, very smart man, must understand that. It will come across as religious mania. What do you say to that?
It's never crossed my mind before that me saying Jesus Christ might put people off.
Right.
No, of course not. Of course not. Of course not, Richie. Of course that's gone out through my mind many, many, many times. And that, of course, is the test of a Christ, that you will tell God's truth even when people will criticise you, or even, say, throw you out of their house or do all sorts of things to you. If you know in your heart that you're telling God's truth, you'll think, well, this is a temporary test. It's all going to be okay in the end, so I'm going to carry on telling God's truth. And believe me, Rushy, it wasn't just when I've been Jesus, or just when I was in 9/11, or when I was in Stop the War, or when I was first blowing the whistle, or when I was at university, or when I was at school. I've always been doing this all my life.
Yeah.
When I blew first blew the whistle, they leaked my university reference from school. And it said he's a rebel who likes to sail close to the wind, basically. And I saw myself as a rebel. I just saw myself as saying things that I thought were true and seemed to be commonsensical. I've really kept the same values all of my life of trying to tell truth and defend the oppressed and try and make the world a more peaceful place. What's happened to me, though, is I've evolved. The kind of people who are criticizing me for saying I'm Jesus and so on, they clearly haven't looked at my research, because if they looked at my research, they would realize that my research into law is absolutely meticulous. It clearly documents where that law is called a higher law in their system. They haven't got anywhere to go in terms of argument. They've got to go to the position of unlawfulness, because they can't argue with it.
And I've seen the documents you've sent to me over the years, and like I said, it stacks up. And the reason I ask you back on, and will of course ask you back on again in the future, is because for me, your sincerity absolutely shines out of you. You believe what you say, and for me, that's it. That's game over. That's all I'm interested in. But when you say, you know, I'm Jesus, you mean that Jesus, or whatever Jesus really is, works through you as works through others? Or do you, or are you actually saying, people want to know, that you are Jesus?
Yeah, to be clear, Jesus is the God above. I'm his incarnation, therefore Jesus Christ. Or if you look at the original Hebrew, he is Yahweh Elohim, and I am Yahweh Sabaoth. But both could be transliterated as Jesus Elohim or Jesus Sabaoth. But I'm not. It's not so just a Western concept. It comes up in Islam and Judaism and all sorts of cultures across the world, the Maoris and so on. And I am that figure. Now, obviously, when I was first shown this in my putative spiritual journey and God came to me, you know, my first reaction was, I must be going mad. Or this is what happens when people go on a spiritual journey. They get tested by being told they're the chosen one. And a while, I'm to believe I need to just rely upon what God tells me. I can show people in documents that predate me, mainly in the Hebrew Torah.
That line, David, has gone really, really, really bad. It's breaking up terribly. I'm going to just briefly disconnect and reconnect before we run out of time anyway. It got very bad there, that line. Let's try it again, as David was giving us that explanation as to whether or not he believes he is Jesus. Sorry, we lost you there, mate, because it went really bad there. The connection dropped out on us. I hope it's a bit better now.
Yeah. And I was just saying about the documentation that I was taken to, that people can examine them for themselves. This is summarized in the third and final testament, part one, the Book of Hashem. And it just shows you documents that associated, you know, created long before my lifetime, where long before my lifetime, people are saying you're going to find the name of the Messiah here, the name of God, or the ineffable name of the Messiah. So when I find the Hebrew letters that transcribe into my name, you know, I've got to think that God's trying to tell me something. And there is an argument, obviously, that the Torah is created by a consciousness higher than man. People have truly analyzed the Bible code and the kind of prophecies and the exactness of those prophecies it seems to make. The honest statistician is forced to conclude it comes from a higher consciousness. So if my name is found in there associated with the Messiah that's prophesied in those documents, really, it's not an unreasonable thing to think it might actually be that Messiah, basically. That, you know, the Jews were not chosen by God as a chosen people. They were one of several sets of people chosen for different tasks. The Mayans chosen for the calendar. The Hebrews were chosen to preserve the name of the Messiah, basically.
And that's, if I was Jeremy Clarkson now, I would say, on that bombshell, that's just about where we've got to wrap it up for today. I believe you sincerely believe that, David. I don't know what to believe about that specifically. Listeners will draw their own conclusions. I do recommend, folks, that you do go to bookofthelaw.org. We will be talking about common law and debt and dealing with the system and taxation with David in a program in the near future as well. I've really enjoyed that, mate. I really have enjoyed chatting to you about that. Sincerely, a lot of comments have come in about, you know, the Planet X and the planet in our solar system and all of this, and catastrophic events on September the 23rd. It seems that most people who have contacted me go along with you, that what we'll see is another shift towards more understanding of where we are, why we are where we are, and ultimately where we're going. A lot of people seem to go along with that. Thanks for coming back, and we will do it all again in the very near future, of course.
Brilliant. No, thanks, Richie. It's been great to once again be able to have my say and be able to give some people some insight into why I think the way I do. But as I say, it's having the right key to unlock the door. So at this moment, whatever happens on the 23rd, try and stay in love, try and maintain that peace, try and keep the mind empty at times so you can truly understand the communication that's going on. So that's how simple my teaching is. I can sum it up in one word. It's love.
I tell you what, mate, you've earned the right to this platform with everything you've done over the years. You'll always have one here. Simple as that. Cheers for coming back. Look after yourself and we'll talk again soon.
Brilliant. Cheers, mate. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome. David Shaler, live on the line to us there from his home. Of course, former MI5 agent. Did stellar work over the years exposing the plot to kill Gaddafi, the mendacity that led up to the Iraq war, and of course they famously blew the whistle on the fact that MI5 and other intelligence agencies were stalking and keeping secret files on socialists, particularly more often left-wing agitators, commentators and politicians in this country. We're going to take a very quick break. Back in a minute. This is your Richie Allen Show on Thursday, September 21st.
You lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device. Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
Introducing the H2O app, a powerful water structuring application that programs vibrational energies into water through the use of different sound frequencies. Once programmed, the use of water for drinking, cooking, bathing. Give it to your friends and colleagues or spread it around the garden. The list goes on. It's not just water that the app can be used for either. It's great for programming crystals too. The H2O app is free to download and is available on both Android and Apple platforms. For further information, go to h2oapp.online.
There's a place high in the mountains of Spain, a sanctuary where souls gather from all around the globe to learn about themselves and experience powerful changes in the way we see our world. They become awakened to their gifts and their power to heal others. Become part of this ever-growing worldwide family of unique, pure energy healing practitioners. Discover how amazing you truly are. Go to www.markbajerski.com. It could just change your life forever.
Is your mind full of ideas, yet you struggle to put them down on paper? Characters with no home, unfinished concepts that you always wanted to finalize, yet lacked knowledge and drive to complete? The Creative Writing Course from Creative Imaginings may be the long-awaited answer. Designed to help you finish your masterpiece with better language techniques, detailed study of the character, plotted suspense chain, and valuable information to get published. Don't delay your creation. Sign up today. Email Sue on nassusproductions@gmail.com.
Welcome back to the programme. John tweets, the show guest tonight, David Shaler, was very interesting and it was interesting to hear his views, but I started to lose interest when he said he was the son of God. Not sure, says John. And I've never shied away from giving my opinion. Is David the manifestation of God on earth? I wouldn't imagine he is. Does that make David crazy? Does that make him not worthwhile? No, of course it doesn't. I think I've noticed over the years when gifted men and women have a transformation and come to a different understanding of what's going on, come from the sort of background that he came from, and begin to see things differently and see beyond the lies and see through the false flag terror attacks and everything else, it can sometimes lend to people not developing not necessarily developing an ego or becoming egotistical or becoming arrogant, but they can sometimes think that they've been specially chosen to understand that information. Right? You know where I'm going with this, don't you? And I think that might very well be the case with David Scherer, but what do I know? You know, I don't know anything. So I think David is obviously very, you know, I think he's obviously very sincere and believes what it is that he told us there at the end. I don't go along with it, but I can kind of understand how somebody could begin to think like that when they develop insights. And rather than conclude that their own intelligence and their own open-mindedness has led them to see things differently, they think it must be coming from another source, an external source. Now, I can't say that they're wrong because I couldn't possibly prove that they're wrong. And of course, it's possible that other intelligence, other consciousness, or other consciousnesses can impart information to people or give information to people, of course. And I do believe that. But God's doing it, I'm not so sure about that, to be honest. That's where I kind of get off on that. But for me, it never precludes, it should never preclude somebody of his intelligence and understanding of geopolitics, because we often talk about geopolitics. We don't often get into the esoteric with David Shaler. It doesn't preclude him from the programme. So that's where I kind of get off on it. I don't know if that makes any sense, but that's where I am on that. It's been an interesting week. It's been a good old week on the programme. Got to mention a couple of things. Hayden Hewitt will present the last episode of the Live League show. That begins in a couple of minutes' time. In fact, it doesn't. It begins in just over an hour on liveleak.com. It's the final episode for now of the Live League show. Hayden begins a new programme called Trigger Warning, which is going to be very, very, very watchable, I think. The last episode of the Live League show at 10 p.m. tomorrow. Now, get this straight. Tomorrow at 7 p.m, Jamie Icke will be here. He will have a guest with him. They will be talking about some very interesting things. After that, via Skype and via the phone in, Jamie Icke will be taking your phone calls. That's Jamie Icke's Friday night. That is tomorrow. And it's live at 7 p.m. UK time. So make sure you listen out for that. I want to say a hi to Mark Atwood. Mark, good evening. Who says, Richie, we are all an aspect of God. And I was going to ask him that, Mark. And I kind of did ask him, are we all Jesus? Or is it him exceptionally? And he said that he thinks it's him exceptionally. Catherine tweets, aren't we all sons and daughters of God, echoing what Mark said there. So thanks for those comments. Nice to be hearing from you this Thursday. That's it for me. You won't hear me again until Sunday morning. Well, you will. Subscribers to davidicke.com. Subscribers. Tomorrow we'll hear David and myself chatting away about the big news stories of the week. I'll be recording that with David in the AM tomorrow, and it'll be on davidicke.com whenever it gets released tomorrow to subscribers to davidicke.com. Jamie Icke tomorrow at 7, and I'll be back live with you for Sunday View on Sunday morning at 11 a.m. live. That's a live programme at 11 a.m. Thanks to you for listening. Thanks to Simon for looking after the YouTube channel. Really appreciate that, Simon. Thanks to Jean Ann for words of wisdom in Ireland, in the West. And I'll see you on Sunday. Jamie Icke live tomorrow in this studio with Jamie Icke's Friday night. Until Sunday, bye for now. Bye now.
We have all the time in the world. Time enough for life to unfold all the precious things love has in store. We have all the love in the world. if that's all we have. You will find we need nothing more. Every step of the way will find us with the cares of the world far behind us. We have all the time in the world just for love. Nothing more, nothing less. Oh.